irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. Here with my man, Josh the Dude.
What's up?
How do you do, Josh the Dude?
How's it going?
Filling in for Eddie Pence. You're like a regular
I'm
now.
I'm here.
Man.
What's this?
You're hired.
Four times? Five times?
Four times, dude. Three times a lady. Once, twice. How was your week? What'd you do?
Too bad. You know, LA, I don't know how many people are outside LA, but we have a train now that goes to the beach.
Have you taken
every
it
day?
You take it every day
every
to the
day.
Beach?
I love it.
So tell me where you start and where you go.
Well, Culver City area.
Right.
And I take it down.
So you're not going to let our listeners know where you live.
No. Why would you
Culver
do that?
Culver City area.
Exactly.
The district of
Culver City.
Culver City
area. And yeah, goes all the way to the beach. It's a big deal.
That is a. How long did it take you? 25 minutes?
The whole trip with walking and everything probably takes like a half hour.
And you get off like right at the pier?
Just before, yeah. Right on
That's crazy.
Like 4th Street.
How many stops?
4th Street. I think just like 4 or 5 stops in there.
Dude, and that took like, what, 2 years to make?
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. I remember it was a big deal when it got to Robertson.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
But now it's like it takes you all the way.
But if anyone's listening from LA, they got to fix their shit because it's packed, completely packed. Like, where you can't even get on the train sometimes.
Why? Because everybody's just like, dude, they got a train to the beach.
Yeah, and there's I'm sure there's other. I mean, some days there's a delay because there was something on, you know, the tracks, whatever. And so if you're waiting for like 20 minutes for a train, every stop just collected every single person.
Oh, man.
It's like a wall of people sometimes.
You're not selling it for me, man.
No, that part's worse. But the best is on the way home where it would take me an hour to drive home on the 10.
Takes you 20 minutes.
Yeah. And you just chill. Take a round on my phone. Play some games,
God,
whatever.
That's awesome.
That part's awesome.
I want to take it because, you know, my family lives in Pasadena. Mm-hmm. I want to take it from Pasadena all the way to Santa Monica just to see
That'd
how long
great.
It would take.
Yeah.
And, you know, the ease of the travel, you know what I mean? Because you have to switch trains, I think, once or twice.
To go to Pasadena?
Yeah, if you
Probably.
Go to Pasadena,
yeah.
I think you have to switch in Hollywood or you have to switch in downtown Union Station. But, dude, it's crazy.
It's a big step.
Big step.
And the fact that we used to have them is crazy.
Well, the fact that we can go all the way from Pasadena to the beach.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And
every other big city is like, wait, what do you mean? LA?
Yeah, you're like, dude, we've had Martha. We've had this.
Why doesn't LA have a train? But yeah, it's crazy.
But
it's awesome.
A big deal. It's a big deal. But I still love driving.
Not in LA, I don't.
Oh, see, it's all about
Hate
the side
it.
Roads.
Hate
all about
it.
The side roads.
Well, I got here with Waze today. If it wasn't for Waze,
see?
Who knows? But
And were you on time? Did you beat it? I like to beat my GPS. I like to
I didn't beat
weave
it.
Through traffic. I like to take side roads. I discover parts of LA. You know what I mean? You got a phone call.
There's a phone call here.
Well, let's take it. Who is it?
Let's
Cheapers.
See.
Hello, Wake Up Hollywood. Who's this?
This is Shane. I'm just calling to find out. Are we talking about the Orlando conversation tonight, today?
I mean, we can. We can talk about the Orlando thing. What do you want to say about it?
Well, basically, I was wondering why everyone is against Trump and Christianity involving this situation when it was supposedly the man called him allegedly.
Well, that's a loaded question. I mean, you're talking politics. You're talking gun control. Where are you from?
I'm from Missouri.
You're from where?
Missouri.
Oh, Missouri. So what was your reaction when you first heard about the shootings?
Well, when I first heard about the shootings and found out that it was by a man, I thought it was self-hate. Which I believe that it was self-hate. but
most of them are. That's the sad thing is yeah. most of them. It's like it's not like you know. I was just having this discussion with Josh on the way over
and
here.
It sounds like that's a lot to do with it. I mean, the guy was supposedly on dating apps for men, and even his ex-wife said he was gay. So it seems like it might be the case, but.
And yeah, you know, I know the notion that guns don't kill people. People kill people. Of course, I've heard all of that, but it's just like
my point is, if the guy was supposed to be gay, then why was he shooting other gay people?
Well, because that's how self-hate works. You hate what you hate what you don't want to understand about yourself. Sometimes, you know.
Yeah, but. What caused him? What led him to do this?
So. Yeah, but you're looking for a rational answer to an irrational person. I mean, we don't normally just go into a place and shoot it up. I mean, it's kind of hard to figure out the guy's brain of why he would do it if he is gay when he's willing to do something like that in the first place.
Yeah. Well, the situation of it is, instead of people trying to ban guns, which people who are civilized need guns for protection. But the situation of it is, people need to find the cause that leads to the situation.
I totally agree. I think it's like beyond a background check. I think it's kind of like some kind of mental, you know, check in some ways. Like I don't know. There's a lot of it's a loaded issue. That's the problem. But I think to not do anything would be a crime.
I think that stronger gun restrictions should be applied. However, this man was investigated by the FBI since 2013 and yet was able to get a gun.
Well, that's because Congress didn't pass this bill that would have restricted him from being allowed to get a gun. So that's the thing. It's like not everybody's on the same page as far as how to do background checks or like, you know, how to run the process. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think, you know, with like when you get a driver's permit, you have to wait a year until you can drive behind a car on your own. And, you know, you can walk into a store and get a gun and just, you know, have your way with it within a few months, you know. So I think the process has to be revised.
Yeah. So my opinion is, or I want your opinion, what do you think that led him to do this?
Josh, you go first.
I have no clue why someone would do this.
Well, I think. Well, I don't think. I think I'm sure there was pressure from his father. I'm sure there was like some kind of like homophobic, you know, philosophy that was kind of instilled in him by his father or by family or friends. And you know, if he had closet feelings, you know, he probably didn't want to investigate them, and that just, you know, built into a rage. He probably got married. I think he was married twice, too. He had a previous marriage where he was beating his wife, so he was taking that on her, and then he was married again, and, you know, I'm sure he was also beating her. I think that's what she's told the FBI, that there have been some bouts. But I think it just comes down to it's really love and fear. It's like you either act on love or you act on fear, and I think basically he acted on fear, and that's a shame when so many innocent people are the victims of that.
Yeah, but then again, today in Amarillo, Texas, we had a Muslim of Islam there committing another act, holding up people in Amarillo, Texas, Amarillo, Texas, Walmart, and where the police came and had a standoff and shot the guy.
That's crazy.
So what is it about Islam that...
Well, the ironic thing is, I know Muslims, and I know a ton of Muslims, and they're not violent people. And it's just a strange part.
I'm not saying that all Muslims are.
Right.
I'm saying radical Islam.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different thing. I mean, there's radical Christians.
Yeah, I mean,
they're people that are just like...
radical Christians.
I mean, I don't think there's any easy answer to any of it. When it comes to guns, when it comes to, you know, Muslims, I mean, there's Sharia law, which is I don't understand the whole Sharia law thing. So I think there's a lot of big issues, but I don't think there's any simple answer or any simple excuse or way to solve any of it.
I think the only way you solve it is by acting on love.
The way I look at it, the way I see it, Sharia law should be imposed and forced on against our American Constitution. Because from what I understand about Sharia law, if we don't if we don't submit to their way, then our rights are taken away.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? Yep. I'm right there with you. The rights, our rights are slowly being stripped when it has nothing to do with it, but...
All we can do is hopefully somebody will be voted into office that will be the lesser of two evils, and we can see how they run the country in a way that is
exactly.
somewhat agreeable.
Well, I don't see Hillary doing it, and I don't see Bernie Sanders doing it. as for what I see Trump is the only one making sense here, because for the simple reason that he's saying it how it is.
What about the Green Party or Libertarian Party?
I'm all for Trump. I'm Trump 2016. I think that Trump is speaking out exactly on the true situation. All Hillary and Bernie is doing is basically signing over America. They're allowing, they want more, they want the borders open. They want more Muslim immigrants to come in, which when that takes place, and then we're going to have more problems.
Well,
now, if a Muslim can be here in America and they respect the American Constitution, that's fine. But when they try to enforce the Sharia law upon the United States, that's disrespecting.
Agreed. That's agreed. Citizens. I think only exactly. time will tell, you know. You just have to see how the political race plays out, my friend.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, thanks for taking the time to call in.
Yeah, thank you for hearing me out. I got your number through by Susan Olsen, who plays Cindy Brady.
Awesome.
So I wanted to call and express my opinion. So.
Well, thank you for calling. We appreciate it, and keep tuning in.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Oh, I think our special guest of the evening has arrived, Mr. Pete Hopkins. Oh, say hello. Say hello. Say hello. Say hello.
Thank you.
How are you, man?
I'm well. How are you?
That was interesting, right? You got a little taste of, you know, the South.
Yes, I did.
Shows what people are talking about, though. People are talking.
It's on the people's minds.
It definitely
people
is.
I get to hear it.
Talking about people.
That's right. We're going to shift gears. Let's talk
Sounds
music.
Good.
Pete, I've known you forever, and I get to ask you all these fun questions, man.
Okay, let's do it.
You a little nervous?
I'd be
a little
nervous.
No, I'm just kidding.
Would I
I'm just
be
kidding.
Nervous?
You shouldn't be nervous. Okay. We're friendly people, right, Josh?
Yeah, people Except of Missouri. People
talk,
of Missouri
yeah,
are friendly
right.
people.
You know what the funny thing is? It's like, he was nice.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
He was totally cool. The caller was great. He
I
was
think
awesome.
He's being rational. I mean, he's trying to think about things.
He makes
things.
Valid points. Yeah. Like that's a great debate. That's a great discussion. That's how we should be talking as a... A species,
mm-hmm.
instead of
species.
As a race, as
I hear
a
you.
Human race.
I hear you.
But anyways, Pete, how have you been, man?
Species.
Yes, well.
That's
you're
funny.
You're a human species.
I'm a species.
You are.
That's how we should speak as a species.
Well, let's find out after this interview.
I'm just kidding.
So you hail all the way from Seattle, I think, right?
You have a good memory.
Yeah. See this?
Yeah.
Sharp.
Yeah.
Sharp in my old age.
Sharp
as a tack.
Sharp like a razor.
All right. So how did you get into music? Like, what was the thing that did it for you? And like, did you have family that were playing records?
Yeah.
Did you come out of the womb when you're like, I want to play guitar? What did it?
Doesn't everybody?
Well, I didn't. I came late to the game.
No, totally. No,
I still don't.
My mama was a piano player and a singer. My uncle was a drummer. My aunt was a bass player. In fact, I heard a lot of songs. I heard them play them before I heard the original versions. They had a band.
Did you grow up in the Partridge Family, dude? That's awesome.
I think I love you. That's them, right?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, that'd be embarrassing if it wasn't.
That's your uncle right there. Just kidding.
Yeah.
So they're all playing classic songs?
Like, been around me, I'm literally raised on music.
That's amazing.
100% raised on music.
What was the first instrument you attacked?
It was the guitar.
Okay. Really? Most people start on piano.
Well, technically, I guess it could have been the piano, because my grandma had a piano. She played, too. And I would play at that, but I didn't, like, study it.
You weren't like, this is not my bag.
No, but I was kind of special. Like, I mean, they knew right away that I was very musically inclined, because when I sat down and played at the piano, it sounded like music.
They're like, this kid knows.
Yeah, but this is without any official
training.
Oh, wow.
You just did it by ear.
And how old is this? What age are you at this point?
I was like 4 years old.
Okay, wow.
Damn, really?
Yeah,
you're just sitting there plunking on the piano?
Yep.
Nice.
Making up songs.
You're like, that's awesome,
though. I am my own Mozart.
Singing songs and, yep. All of it.
And did you start with like classical music? Did you start with pop songs at the time? What were you like clunking around in the beginning?
Are we talking when I was four?
Yeah. No, I mean, like, you know, like somebody's, like, you do, like, boogie-woogie stuff. Like, I did.
He could rock music. The shit out of Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Dude, you'd be
could
surprised.
Rock the shit out of it.
I did some sort of Native American sounding things. Actually.
See?
Lots of fourths and fifths.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Dun, 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 dun,
very nice.
But whatever I did, like, it sounded like music.
You were like, this is cinematic. I see the movie in my mind. I'm just composing the soundtrack.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
and you started playing guitar how old?
I was about 8 years old when I first started.
That's, man, I'm so envious of that.
Are you?
That's awesome.
Dude, I wish I started when I was like six.
Because I wish I started.
Like, yeah, I no, wish but that's I started. The thing. It's like, once you get into an instrument,
I started
playing guitar
late.
When I was 18.
That's
and I was like, at least it came into my life at that time, but man, like being so young,
yeah,
the curiosity and just like there's no inhibitions when you're that young. It's just like,
yeah, and you don't have shit else to do. Like, yeah, you can literally just play guitar all day if you want.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can, yeah. And I miss that.
Yeah, I bet. I hear it.
Yeah.
Go back, dude. Go
back. I'd love to be 8 years old again.
So what drew you to the guitar? Was it like hair metal? Was it rock and roll?
Yeah, it was definitely metal. It was kind of like, sort of Metallica
type
stuff like that.
And Justice for All, that was one of the records.
Oh, that was a great one. I mean, I'm a huge fan of pretty much everything up to the Black record.
I even like the Black record.
No, I love the Black record.
That's a great record.
It's everything after.
Right. That it starts to...
Nicky, they kind of broke my heart, man.
Yeah,
they were like it for me. And you know what? They took a hell of a dive.
It sucks when a band does
I
that.
I don't understand.
You're like, I love this band. No, I don't love them. But like,
they were way too successful when they got... Fucking, I don't know what happened. The music suffered extremely. Their houses got better, but their records did not.
Well, because that just happens with success sometimes. Like, you just get less hungry for, you know, to dig deep into, like, whatever it is that you were first, like, hungry about.
Cut your hair.
Yeah.
It's not get about a house hair, now though.
In the suburbs.
No, but he was because a James Hatfield.
When they play live now, they play the old songs, they kill it.
Right.
They're all over it.
But when James Hatfield did Enter Sandman, happening. And he had, like, the goatee and the hair.
Oh, man, badass.
That I mean, he looked badass. Yeah, he looked ridiculously badass. It was like, dude, whatever that is, that guy just is living the life, you know?
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
And now you see him, and he looks like an old soft
have
man.
You seen?
It's like,
have you seen the meme? Has this one passed around?
No.
It's got, okay, you know the song One?
Yeah, of course.
Darkness! Mm-hmm. Well, someone...
That was a good impersonation.
They went and changed all the words, and it's like, look at my pants! Look at my shoes! I got it all, it's on sale! It's like him. It's like him in, like, Dockers with a Hawaiian shirt.
How to be complacent.
That's awesome.
There
and successful.
That's fantastic, that.
So you were 8 years old. Did you start with a nylon string? Did you start with a steel string?
I started with a steel string, and then quickly I went to an electric.
And you just became one of those shredders? I need to learn.
Yes.
See, that's what I'm envious about. Yeah, that. So when you're that young, and it comes to you so quickly. You
right, know? So how was it for guitar when you first started? Was it the same like when you first touched the piano? I mean, did you just pick it up easily?
Well, it was different. I was a little older, and they enrolled me right away with a teacher.
Okay.
So it kind of... But even in the little bit of time before that, I'm still just like, well, and then having played the piano, I mean, the notes are all in different places, but they're the same. And I also, I have perfect pitch, so I could easily transfer stuff that I had heard on the piano.
Right, awesome.
Do you know what perfect pitch is, Josh?
A movie?
Well,
good point, man. That's what y'all thought, I really have that a cappella film. And that helped me with the piano. What? No.
Well, perfect. Why don't you explain it since you have it?
Well, I'll tell you. I didn't realize I had it until I was I was a violin student at the time, and my teacher was. We were doing some ear training stuff, and she played a chord, and she's like, "What is that?" I said, "That's C minor." And she said, "You have perfect pitch." I said, "What's that?" And then she explained.
That's amazing. Which how old are you? Crazy. How old are you?
I was probably 14, 15. Something.
Okay, wow.
I have another question before, but I mean after.
Perfect pitch means that you can hear a pitch and identify it without any kind of
You don't need a reference.
Right, okay.
Reference, yeah. Like, he can just sing like a G. He could sing an A.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have that. I have relative pitch, which is like...
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, though, and then this part sucks a little bit. As I got a little older, it's not quite as sharp as...
Really? It goes away?
Well, I looked into it, and yes, it's a fact that
that's
if you get
crazy.
Older... You don't have it quite the same way.
Have you seen that little kid? I know you've seen that
I have
kid
seen
video.
That little
that
kid.
That kid is a
what
monster.
What the hell is that?
There's a video of a little kid, and he's got like this older jazz piano teacher.
He's insane.
And he's like, what's this chord? And the kid's like no older than like 7 or 8.
No.
And he's just like, yeah. That's a diminished, you know, like
yeah.
he just doesn't.
Oh,
he,
wow.
he's,
and it's not like one note. It's like a 7 note.
No, it's sometimes
wow.
just
chop
yeah,
chord,
7 note chord,
in the
and
bass
he
and
picks out every note.
At the top, it's
crazy.
Oh,
it's
the
so
only
nuts.
Thing that
crazy.
Makes me feel a little better is I'm pretty certain that he's on the spectrum. I'm pretty sure he's autistic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can kind of tell by the way.
So
he
you're making
that
you're making yourself feel better.
Hell yeah! You better.
You
got to
give yourself
I
an
saw
edge.
That kid, I'm like, are you kidding me? Oh, thank God.
I know there's going
to
be
autistic.
But to that point, though.
I can't believe you said that on the air. That's recorded. That's
no,
in
man.
The stratosphere.
All I'm
man.
Saying, no, I'm saying is that they are they're documented. I knew
right.
someone. I was in a relationship for a long time with somebody who worked with children with autism, so I know quite a bit about it.
Okay.
And they.
How's
have,
Josh on the spectrum?
They have,
just kidding. Just kidding.
Not enough.
They have a particular strain of brilliance in them that. They just far exceed what other people
well,
without
oh,
autism
yeah.
can do.
Yeah, I mean, I just watched something on autism recently, actually, and it was a couple kids that I've seen, but one is, like, he's working out to be one of the smartest people in the world, and he's,
mm-hmm.
like, 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to dispute Einstein's Big Bang Theory.
He
and he's going to publish a paper on it, and he's like 15 or 16.
Yeah.
Damn.
And
I'm,
at four,
I'm
the same
behind.
Kid. This, this same kid walked into a music store with his parents
uh-huh.
at like 4, 5 years old, and he started playing Beethoven.
What?
And they said that they don't even know if he heard it before. They don't remember like playing it for him, and
see,
he just started playing.
Those people scare me.
It's
I'm like,
crazy.
Dude, I can't do that.
It's crazy.
I have to sit there and plunk every note out and then go, okay, let me practice this for a couple weeks, and then I'll get it. That's crazy. Okay,
yeah.
My next question is, so you went from guitar to violin? Usually it's the other way around.
The violin didn't last very long. I was not a fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you went from shredding guitar
to
a fiddle.
Yeah, yeah.
Very,
how, do you, what, how did that even come into play?
Well, because I can tell you, because I was really into this violinist by the name of Paganini.
Okay, of course.
Is basically like...
The shredders
a shredder
of violin.
So I was like, I want to do that. That looks awesome.
And then you
and
start, and you're like, wee, wee,
well, you know, the funny thing
so
is,
tough.
I always
there's
have a problem watching
about
them.
The violin
when they really rock
wear.
Out. They're like,
yeah.
you know, they, I'm on radio,
they can,
but they're
you don't
like,
think they can bring it?
Putting the full leg
you don't
into
think
a form.
Swag. Violin swag.
It just doesn't
it
look right. It just doesn't look right.
It's not the same. Definitely not the same. But.
I didn't like the violin because you have to hold it with your chin.
And you get that little
I got
bump.
TMJ from trying to play the violin. You know what that is?
Oh, no. What's the... What?
You hear that?
Yeah.
That's my jaw.
I thought you were just coming on to
pop. Yeah. You like that? You like that?
I thought we were, ow! I thought we were seeing some perfect pitch.
No, but... No.
All right, so you're 14.
All due respect.
You're still, are you still playing guitar during
I
all
did
of
not
this?
I enjoy my time with the violin.
I can't imagine. I don't think I would have. I started with clarinet.
And nails on a chalkboard, too. When
oh,
you, when
man.
You miss the pitch...
Well,
nightmare.
With, oh my god,
yeah,
perfect pitch.
Exactly.
That's a nightmare.
That was it.
You're like,
yeah, no intonation
I can't
on that. Dude.
Oh man.
Yeah.
So intonation that. Like it like every note on every instrument is a little bit sharp or a little bit flat.
Right.
Okay.
So there's no such thing as a perfectly intonated instrument.
True.
So if you have perfect pitch and you play any instrument, there are discrepancies between almost every note on every string on every fret.
The fretless ones are the worst.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because it's just like
just
this noodling area where it's just gray. You're like, this isn't the right pitch. I mean,
right.
God, that's...
That's why
we should
like,
see perfect pitch, too.
Violinists have to be so on point. That's why, I mean, most people, when they play violin, if they get into an orchestra, they just get chair. They don't get to be soloists because you have to be so precise with that.
I went to music school, and it was like, those were the people that were practicing 8 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like,
oh, yeah.
I ain't going to do that. Let me figure out how to do this
and
in a much
well,
shorter
the
way.
The guitar sitting over there saying, hey, remember me? I make you feel good about yourself. Come back.
So did you play in like a jazz band or anything in high school?
Matter of fact, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, once I quit the metal stuff, I joined the jazz ensemble. Got really into funk and jazz. Miles Davis.
That's awesome.
Herbie Hancock. That kind of stuff kind of changed everything. Really, actually, really opened up my spectrum.
I always love when like metalheads get into jazz because it's like, dude, there's it's like really those are the spectrums of music, dude. When it comes to everything out of classical, it's like there's jazz and then there's metal, and it's like when you can love both, dude, your facility, your style, your like intellect with music, I think just your just scope of it, music becomes broadened.
Yeah.
So how was that transition for you going from metal to like jazz changes where it's like everything's different?
Dude, first time I heard the major seven chord, I was like,
what is that?
What is all of this? Somehow, you know, E5, G5, A5 just doesn't quite satisfy anymore after that. It's way atonal. It's not a broad enough harmonic, I'm going to say spectrum again because that's the best word for it. It's like,
let's just call this, this show is going to be called Spectrum. Now, Josh, first well, the seventh first of a chord.
There's kids on a spectrum. Now there's music on a spectrum.
That's right.
We're going through it, happens, it all. It, we're going, it should be called Spectrum.
So when he's talking about the seventh of a chord, basically like you have with rock and roll, it's really just the root, usually the third and the fifth, and then the other... the root and octave higher. That's generally what most rock music is. It's okay. Just a chord like that. With jazz, you have sevenths, you have ninths, you have thirteenths, which just elevenths. You have all these colors that change what a chord can sound like and what it can do, and it takes your ears out of like what most conventional music, pop music, even classical music
particularly
does.
Particularly when the bass note drops to another note over another chord.
Okay.
It's pretty wild. Crazy. It's pretty wild. So
it's not for everybody. You lost me, honestly, for sure. It's not for everybody.
No, but it's pretty exciting too when you especially as a musician when you start exploring those colors.
Yeah, like, I bet.
Miles Davis was a classical trumpeter and he went to Juilliard and he dropped out because he was like, there's more. There's more than just this. And he started playing with like Charlie Parker and started discovering jazz and all that. It's like the basis of jazz.
That's
what
awesome.
He was discovering and exploring.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what the basis of what jazz is now. So
crazy
thing is, so you were playing Herbie Hancock, I'm sure you're playing Chameleon. You're playing
lots
Kind
of
Blue. You're playing. What did you play from? Kind of. What did you play from Miles Davis?
I played all blues.
Okay.
I played a tune called Tune Up. Yep. Often, a lot. So What?
Awesome. So What's the standard?
Yeah.
So What's a great track. It's a great track. One of my favorite records. Anyways, okay.
You, can, you know, even if you're not a jazz person, like Kind of Blue is.
Oh man.
Kind of Blue is something everyone should listen to.
You know what? Let's talk about that for 2 seconds. All right, you came from metal into jazz.
Yeah.
So if you were to list like two or three jazz records for the like average schmo, not that you're an average schmo, by the way, Josh, but to just like put in records, what would you recommend?
Well, Kind of Blue,
right?
100%. And that's my it. That's it for me. I like lots of other ones like Giant Steps, Coltrane, anything like
fantastic
that.
One.
Just about anything. Sonny Rollins, really nice. Those are the ones that I go to the most.
For me, when I was learning
about
jazz,
I like Pat Metheny too.
Pat Metheny's amazing.
Yeah.
Headhunters, Herbie Hancock.
But Pat Metheny. The reason I didn't say Pat Metheny is because Pat Metheny is, if you're not a guitar player, you're probably not going to give a fuck about Pat. You're really not. You're just not. He's an amazing jazz guitar player.
That's true.
But most of his stuff would go right over somebody.
Pat Metheny he's just a badass musician.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of Blue, Miles Davis is definitely one of mine.
Yeah.
I'd say Blue Train or Hank Mobley's Soul Station, and then Headhunters.
Headhunters.
Like Headhunters to me was like
Headhunters.
It was like funk and jazz and all these like cool sounds. Like you probably heard it. I'm sure.
I don't know. I'm
no, that's all right. It's okay.
Falling off the rails.
You know,
this
is exciting to talk about jazz. We never get to talk about jazz.
Is the reason I'm still convinced that I can infuse jazz into my pop music and people won't hate it.
Well, Herbie Hancock, that guy's done everything, man. He's done everything. That guy's the man.
Yeah.
All right. So you went through jazz, the high school programs. And then what made you want to pursue music on a professional level?
Well, I mean, other than the fact that, like, music was... I'm not a super well-rounded guy, you know? Like, I didn't play a lot of athletics. I didn't do that kind of stuff. I didn't have...
You were the clown?
Yeah. I didn't have that kind of skill. And this was something I was very good at it. And I liked that. And so it was encouraging to find out just how far I could take it, really.
It's an interesting thing that you say that. It's like a lot of people have, you know, I think every person is given a gift. you know, of some kind. Maybe it's discovered in their life, maybe it's not. But it's funny that you say it's like, well, I wasn't good at these things, but I was good at this.
Was. Yeah.
And it just responds, like, you gravitate towards it and explore it. I mean, like,
well,
most people don't ever
do
get
that
opportunity. Yeah. Not everybody is able to get that.
Well, but I bet
close
if I'd have went out and I tried to run the mile and I did it in 4 minutes, you'd probably be looking at a guy who was trying to win an Olympic medal.
It's funny. You know, I once ran with a Kenyan guy. I ran like he kicked my ass.
Wait, you
and,
ran,
dude? This is long. This is like in my early 20s.
I'm like, no way.
But the funny thing is, I was like, Michael. I'm like, how do you run so fast? And he said, Nikki, I wake up and I run.
Exactly.
Right. Like,
yeah.
That's what he does. What you know what I mean? So it's just in people in a different way. Music is in me like that. It's in you like that as well. And computers, you were just telling me about computers.
Yeah, and I love a good TV show. I'm so good at watching TV shows. I'm great at it.
I wish that was a profession, right?
Yeah, totally.
I'm really good at that, too. All right, so
you
explored this talent, and when did you first want to write music?
I didn't for a long time. In fact, let's speed this along. It was when I started to sing.
Okay.
Yes.
So when did you start singing?
I started singing. That came after the jazz and the funk, and I was in some bands and stuff, and like I had a lot of really cool ideas, but my voice, like, I had pitch, but it needed a lot of work.
Right.
My voice was not naturally well balanced. I had to work really hard to get all that. And as I became a student of the voice. Well, you know, you're singing.
Yeah.
You're singing. So you're now matching words with music. And all the words that I didn't say in my life that I'd only saved for music, because I was a quiet kid.
Right.
I was soft-spoken. I wasn't...
So give you that ability to express.
I needed to.
Wow.
I had shit to say, man.
Yeah, it's empowering.
Yeah.
I had things to say.
Well, when did you first start writing? 16? Were you that angsty teen?
No, I would have probably been in my 20s by the time I started writing.
All right.
Yeah.
And what was the song that inspired you to sing?
No, that's not true. I was a teenager.
Okay,
but the
so
stuff
you,
in the teenager
I
was
knew
like, it was death.
You grew up in Seattle.
Death,
man.
Injustice, death, injustice.
Now death, you grew up in like
metal.
You grew up in the area that Jimi Hendrix lived in.
Yeah.
You grew up in the area that Kurt Cobain and a lot of the whole grunge music circuit. Like, how did those influences kind of
They didn't.
Not at all?
No, actually, I was kind of resentful.
Ever? Why? You were just like, never. I'm not into Hendrix. I'm not into
Kurt. I was, no disrespect, and I enjoy grunge music, but the path that I was on for music and the path that grunge took were very much at ends with each other.
Hmm.
I was trying to become technically proficient at an instrument.
And grunge is like
inside
raw.
And out.
Yeah.
Grunge is... They don't even... Oh, no, I was quite angry about it.
Let's talk about this. Yeah, I like it.
I was like, this fucking guy, man, he doesn't even sing in key. His fucking guitar is out of tune.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was irritating
to
me. It took a long time for me to actually respect that, particularly with Kurt Cobain and Nirvana, that what he brought really was special.
Right.
And it was.
It was.
100%.
Totally. Totally.
And I get that now. I didn't as an angry kid.
You know, the funny thing is I got it in high school.
Yeah.
But I've come back. I've revisited it. Same with Hendrix.
Yeah.
Like, Hendrix to me, I was like, dude, this guy is just an icon.
Well, I always loved him.
Man, and I keep coming back to him, and I'm like, dude, he only had 4 records.
I mean, I remember
4 years.
Kurt Cobain, though, in high school. I mean, I remember kids like... That they were all about that. I mean, even when he killed himself or whatever happened, got killed, killed himself. But people wanted to kill themselves after hearing it. It was such a like crazy weird.
He was influential because he gave he liberated a lot of people that were so angry.
Yeah,
you know, or just like outcasts. Like,
but emotion aside, what he was doing musically was some twisted shit.
Yeah, no, totally. And lyrically, it's like super dark. And
but Matt, you have to put that, like, there's no way that dude was always angry. But he had even off stage in life, any interview had to be like this depressed, I don't care about this, I don't care about life. He had to put that act on all the time.
Let me tell you about
how much time you spent in Seattle.
But you got millions of dollars in the bank.
But that wasn't what it was about. So the funny thing about Kurt Cobain, I just read something on him. He used to have a stomach condition where he was in pain a lot. Because he couldn't eat a lot of foods. So he had a problem digesting a lot of things. So he had a condition that was actually giving him pain whenever he just was living or eating.
Huh,
or,
I never
so
heard this.
That part of him has the angsty side. And then he lives in Seattle where the weather is completely gloomy and rainy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that has another factor.
Yeah.
Then you have the other side where it's like he was an outcast and he had, came from a broken home and there's so many other... So it's like...
I'm not saying he started out with an act.
No,
like,
no,
I'm
going
to make an act,
you.
But... I think in time he had to keep that act, even though he wasn't living the same Seattle. Like I'm
depressed
all the time.
I think you just became you just become distant from whatever that is. But anyways, back to you, Pete. Let's make it about you. He's like, what is this? Go to Kirk Cobain.
No, I don't actually mind. I like that.
Yeah, me too. All right. So you, when did you move to LA? What made you want to, you know, start making records?
I went to LA because, like I said, I was doing a lot of singing. And it was my vocal coach, actually, that kind of convinced me that I needed to look into playing in a go graze in larger pastures. He was like, "You need to go to L.A. You've got this pop sound. You've got this bright tenor voice. Like you,
that's
you
the
go
city.
To L.A. Man, you need to go to L.A.
It's L.A. or New York, really, when it comes to music. And you got into production. I want to play something real quick, but tell us like what got you into production.
That's going to be a very jumpy jump.
Oh, we're gonna jump. We're gonna jump around. I'll jump all around.
Jump around.
jump up and get down. You're like a jukebox, man.
Yeah, really.
So what got you into production?
Production was in the beginning. It was a means to an end. I had all kinds of things I wanted to do, and I didn't want to have to hire someone else for it.
You had to learn how to do it. That's the same way I did.
Yeah. Speaking of production, can we jump way ahead to like what's happening now?
Yeah. Kind of let's talk about it.
Because I like the yesteryear of Pete Hopkins, but it was pretty awesome. It's been a pretty killer year for me. I got a scholarship to an audio program at Westlake Studio, which is the studio that
Michael Jackson's a Thriller. That's amazing.
Hmm. Yeah. And I took this course, and everybody needs to take this course. You really do. You need to. I'm just going to pitch it because I want everyone
Please.
To know. You need to if you're serious about music production and making the craft. You need to definitely look into Create Music Academy, sponsored by Westlake Recording Studios. I spent a lot of time learning things on my own for years and years and years, piecing everything together, trying things over and over and over again. And I learned a lot of things. But what I learned with this course, I just wish I'd done it years earlier, because it's exactly what you need to know to be doing it like the pros. In a very no-nonsense, cut the fat, get to what matters kind of scenario. And it's absolutely amazing. I can't say enough about it.
Now that's a fucking pitch right
there. I know. I love it. Let's get to something
from the heart. It's not another
good. No, I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
I'm truly impacted.
You changed Josh's life. He's like ready to sign up. Let's get to a song that you produced. Tell us a little bit about the first song you want to play.
One of the songs is off my record that I released last year. That's called I Won't Cry, but that doesn't have anything to do with the production chops and stuff that I learned. I did a reflexive remix. Do you know what that is?
No.
Reflexive remix is when you remix a song, but you go beyond just using the same musical arrangement. You can go in and you can basically change anything. You basically take the a cappella vocal, and after that,
do like an EDM mix.
Do whatever
right.
you want. Yeah.
Is that what this is?
Yeah, that's what I brought.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Let's hear it. Here it goes. That. Hold on a second. Set it up. This is called I Won't Cry.
No.
Okay. Not yet. No.
The other one.
Oh, which one is that?
The reflexive remix is Gimme More.
Okay, we're going to play that one first. Here it comes.
Thank you.
Bust out the glow sticks and just start rocking out.
But that seems fun to make. Is that fun
to
make? It seems like a ton of fun to make.
I'm just picturing Pete Hopkins. This is like dancing. Why are you making it, man? So tell me what you like, your whole perception, vision of the song, what, how you started with it, what made you go in the directions you did.
It was, I mean, it's all, it's every little bit of it was a piece of things that I was learning through that course, and I wanted to just apply every principle I could think of.
And, I love the walls.
And also do it in kind of ways where, like, but still put plenty of me in it.
Right.
You know, because I am that guy who I hear something and I think, yeah, it's good, but could be better, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I've been that way for a long time. But now I'm just like, another way to say it, I'm a fucking ninja, dude.
I love it.
I am, if you want a hit record, I can make you a hit record. Yeah,
what was that?
Yeah, and I can mix, I can master.
It was like a hit record.
You just slapped his ass for that? Good,
just blowing shit up.
I'm the bomb.
That's right.
Yeah, no, but seriously, dude, it's like empowering. I feel like
you got,
I can,
you got the tools
do it
now.
All. There's, because in the past, like, I was hoping that I was doing it right, and
right.
I was thinking maybe, but now I know.
You're like,
I know everything.
It's like you've gone down the rabbit hole.
I can mix, I can produce, I can master. I mastered that today.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Dude, learning all the tricks.
That's awesome.
Those are all the phases.
It's awesome.
Play us something else. What are you going to play us with? What's the second song you brought?
Well, the other song I brought is purely financially driven. I put out a record last year, and it's on iTunes. And this is a song called I Won't Cry, and it's from that. Pay me, because rent is high.
That's right.
In
yeah.
LA.
All right.
Yeah, did you talk that over with your music coach in high school that told you how to move to LA? How high rent is here?
You know what's funny is when I was at the NAMM show this year, I was talking to an artist from Seattle, and they were telling me, like, yeah, get out of LA. Now that you know what you know, get the hell out of LA because the rent will kill you.
Yeah, right. It's crazy.
You're like, what?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's nuts. All right, let's play this. What are we playing?
It's I Won't Cry.
I Won't Cry.
It's a good song. It's
by Pete Hopkins.
Buy it on iTunes.
Yeah. And it's on my record, Outsized Baggage. So go get that.
Ooh, I don't even think about you no more. Well, maybe you think you broke my heart. I'm gonna let you know, dear. It take a lot more hurt than what you got to break this boy in two. Plenty of women in this world, and I'll find love anew, dear. So don't you trouble your girly curls. I'm not thinking about you. Just stop pretending I'm home, ending my life, waiting by the phone, hoping you might call to say that you're sorry, baby. Don't be a fool. You were never that. Course of action to give you no satisfaction. I got no despair, I don't even care. So go out and find another to tangle love in your loving if you dare. Should've known right from the start that you'd be double dealing when we ordered in that restaurant and you ate my meal too. But how could I foresee your appetites going beyond the menu to my best friend in his new Benz? Well, all the best to you too. So stop pretending I'm home, ending my life, waiting by the phone, hoping you might call to say that you're sorry. Choose a course of action to give you no satisfaction. I got no despair, I don't even care. So go out and find another to tangle up in your loving if you dare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very nice. I know that track, man.
Thank you.
Dude, so tell us, like, what was your kind of vision with that song?
I Will Cry.
Look, I just want to not cry.
I actually totally wrote it because it's totally based on an acid loop, a drum loop.
You said acid loop.
I was taking acid, and I thought, I won't cry because acid. No. Acid loops was a drum thing.
Right, right.
And I was like all excited because I had this this keyboard that could put samples in it and stuff, and it was just like, it was kind of again like me trying new shit and
right.
and pushing.
Well, the experiment process is like so vital.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
And like it's got like a Maroon 5-ish kind of vibe. Mm. It's got a funky.
It is.
Like it's kind of like an accumulation of all of like your favorite styles. It's got some improvisation. Mm-hmm. You got a little guitar solo in there
and jazz.
Yeah, and a lot of jazz. And you're doing some jazz licks in there.
Yeah.
Love the guitar licks too, man. It's so tasteful. Tasty. That's some like tasteful stuff. And you're doing all the vocals too, man.
Did all the singing. Did just about everything. There's a live drummer on that. Frank Massaro is the drummer on that. Very nice. Very nice guy. Good, solid.
It's got to be a good feeling when you come out with something. You're like, I did most of this. I'm my own prince.
You know, you'd think so, but sometimes I think it's like, does this guy have any fucking friends?
Yeah. And that's probably where you're the most critical too.
Yeah.
Like that's probably where you really break it apart.
Yeah.
Because if it's like the drummer, you go, ah, the drums are a little off, but I was good.
What I love is that
the drummer wants to play.
It's like you know how to play, you know how to sing, you know how to write, you know how to produce. Mm-hmm. You've done your time on the road, you've done your time like in the studio,
yeah.
And now it's like you're helping others kind of fulfill those dreams.
Right.
Where can people find you if they want to produce their own records?
The best way is probably. Well, I have a website, PeteHopkinsMusic.com.
Yeah, that's what that is.
This is the website.
Spell it out, because people are dumb.
Pete Hopkins, that's PeteHopkins.com.
You got a slogan there, a little tune.
KINS.com.
Beautiful. He wrote that on the spot.
Yeah. Sure did. We got these all day.
So what are you going to play for us last?
And Facebook. Facebook.com/PeteHopkins.
I didn't want to stop you.
Yeah, right. Yeah. iTunes.
Yeah.
Yeah, iTunes.
Yeah, I don't think you can buy my record on iTunes. Records, Odd Size Baggage. Just look for Pete Hopkins.
Are you on Instagram and all of that?
I'm on Instagram.
Dude,
I take
you're
some
social
great
media
pictures.
Professional.
I am reluctantly, yes.
Me too, dude. Me too. I'm like, how much
sometimes
of my life?
Sometimes I'm like, oh my God. Seriously?
What are you going to play? You brought your guitar.
I did.
What are you going to play us?
Which it's been, hello, guitar.
Hello, guitar.
A violin would have been much easier to bring, by the way.
Just for the record. What are you going to play us?
I thought I would play a song called New Umbrella.
All right. Let's hear it.
Okay. This is also on that record. This is proximity wise.
Yeah, I would turn that way actually, just so you can get the. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. This chord is unpleasant. Alright. See the signs ahead, traffic signal flashing red. Still I can't control my motion. Head over heels I spin, tops and turvy turn again. Try to rise above the commotion. My bowls are wearing thin, I'm walking on my heels again. I gotta buy a new umbrella. The sun in the sky echoes me from all high. Dollar time a day helps to put me on my way. Still, I guess it's better than nothing. The wreck spins around on the sound from out of town. Man, I wonder where I'm going. A drift askew astray, another rainy day. Got my new umbrella. I'm gonna buy a new umbrella.
gray is all around. Try to find a street to bounce. The suburb is its own reflection. Down it all up and around the bend and back again. And man, I wanna make a connection. The clouds are closing in, the hairs are rising upon my skin. I gotta find a new umbrella.
On behalf of the Hopkins, that's right. And Josh Ledoux, I'm Nicky Carulla. That was awesome. Thank you, Pete.
Thank you.
We'll have you back.
Thanks for having
me. We'll see you guys next week.